Wiese und Müller Unplugged. The podcast for everything that gets us in motion.
Hello and welcome to a new episode in our podcast Riese and Müller Unplugged. My name is Julia Jankowski, and on this channel we are talking to people working for and working with Riese and Müller and their way of working. So we will disclose some back-end stories from people within the, we call it, social bubble of Riese and Müller. And today I'm talking to Jane Dennison. Jane runs her own consultancy, which helps businesses to address sustainability. And apart from that, she is one of the directors of Shift Cycling Culture, which is a non-profit foundation. And I think she can describe exactly in her own word what is Shift Cycling Culture all about. So altogether, there's a whole bunch of projects within the bike industry she's involved in. So she's a really busy person just around Christmas. I'm really glad to have her here in our studio. And first of all, hello, Jane. How are you doing today?
Hi, Yule. Really nice to be here today. And I'm doing really well, thank you. Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Well, a bit in a rush just before there. Just a couple of days left till Christmas. What is your preparation in terms of Christmas? Or is it not a big thing for you personally?
It's not a huge thing for me, but it's all just been thrown up in the air because I'm trying to get out to see my brother in South Africa, which due to COVID regulations and rules has been cancelled, rebooked, cancelled, rebooked a million times. Anyway.
Yeah, well, the South African is, especially this year, a different story, yeah, in terms
That's
to
right.
Yeah, COVID-19. Okay, Jane, today we're talking about culture, about cycling, about shift in society. So the whole compilation will be Shift Cycling Culture. But starting with cycling, have you moved your bike already today?
Have I moved my bike? Oh no, you've got me on the one day where I haven't moved my bike.
The one out of 365 days without bike riding.
Yeah, there's not many of them, which I'm very pleased to say. A lot of them at the moment are inside because I'm in Scotland and it's December. But I'm still getting outside. I'm trying to force myself to go out in the dark and just keep the outside endorphins going.
And for you, the bicycle is not just an everyday means of transport, isn't it? It plays really a major role in your life.
Yeah, it does actually. I got into racing years ago, probably like, well, 15, 20 years ago when I was living in London, and got the bug at that point. But then as I've got older and maybe not wiser, I've ended up doing more of the longer sort of ultra distance events, which I absolutely love. So long distance is my thing.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about long distance, for me personally, long distance starts something around 20K. What is for you a long distance?
Well, a couple of years ago, I did two races that season. They were both sort of, one was about 1,500 kilometres across round Scotland, the Transalba, and it's sort of a self-supported thing. And then I did an Audax called Paris-Brest-Paris in 2019. That's about 1,200 kilometres. So you're averaging 300 a day. This year, the most I've done is 250 in a day, but I've got a niggly little injury.
250 in a day. So you're getting up like 6 o'clock in the morning or even earlier. How can you just describe the day with 250K on a bike?
You don't need to start that early, actually. It depends. In the summer, it doesn't take as long as in the winter. It's nice to have the daylight hours, and especially sort of midsummer here in Scotland, then that becomes a pretty long day that you have to play with. So no, we'll start any time from sort of 7:30, 8:30. Depends what you've got on that evening and if you need to get back for something. It takes about 8.5 hours.
Wow. But then you're quite, you're cycling on, it's not off-road, it's ordinary roads, yeah?
Yeah, we're on ordinary roads. Quite often I'm following a route and I'm doing it as part of an Audax event, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a sort of a global association that runs these events, very low-key. And they're often on small lanes. They're not on main roads, main busy roads. So really pleasant and just a great way to explore and cover a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm. So what is for you personally fascinating about moving around by bike? Is it some kind of testing and testing your personal limits as well? Or is it more experiencing the environment? What kind of aspects do really attract you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a combination of things. It's mental and physical. I mean, I get a huge amount out of it mentally. The long distance stuff, especially, I weirdly quite like not knowing what the day's going to hold and having various challenges thrown at you, whether those are small mechanicals that you're fixing along the way or weather or something sort of more physical. But no, it's great because you're absolutely in the moment and dealing with whatever is being thrown at you. And then physically, it gives me a reason to keep fit. And it gives me, if I know that I've got these events going on, then it absolutely keeps me on track and keeps me focused on a program to keep fit. So, but also in the environmental side, just being out generally in sort of quite remote areas is just wonderful, seeing different terrains and covering a lot of distance.
Mm. Yes, Scotland is a beautiful country. And I think Scottish people are quite outdoor people, isn't it?
We're quite outdoor people. Well, I wouldn't say all Scottish people are outdoor people, but it's nice that you've got that view of the population. I think we have a few who are less healthy.
Yeah.
Who like eating deep fried Mars bars.
And whiskey as well. Yeah. But yeah, I remember the trips I had to Scotland when I stayed there. I had the impression that the people are quite like oriented towards outdoor activities in general. It's like cliche, you know? It holds true in a way, but not for everyone.
Yeah.
Well, cycling is not only essential part of your private life, but also, let's call it, center of your profession. I mean, you're a director of Shift Cycling Culture, as I mentioned in the introduction. But maybe can you just please describe for us in maybe a few simple words, what is Shifting Cycling Culture all about?
Well, a few years ago, there was three of us who came together and really sort of accelerated what Shift Cycling Culture was about. So it was founded by Leanne Van Leuven. She'll hate that pronunciation, but that's my version of it, who saw that behind, a sport like cycling that is zero emissions and zero negative impact, only positive impact whilst you're on the bike, there's a huge industry that sits behind it that has a big negative impact, sadly. And the consumerism that goes around it, and everything has to be bigger and faster and lighter and newer. So Leanne wanted to change that. She met with me and Eric Brunsvoort, and we also wanted to change that. And the three of us were very passionate cyclists in our own right, so decided to set about seeing how we could do that and engaging with the cycling community at large, and also the cycling industry, to see how really to try and inspire movement in the right direction to reduce the environmental impact of the sport. And we, Shift really is it's a systemic movement that we need here. It's not going to happen overnight. We're not about pointing fingers and blaming. This is all about inspiring positive action in the right direction.
And you started, like, as you said, an initiative, but now you're a foundation. So what are your concrete activities? What are your projects within the Shift Cycling Culture?
Well, do you know, it's evolved as time has gone on. So when we started, we were going to be doing some quite, some physical events like gear swap parties and get out and ride your old clunker and really trying to kind of celebrate what we have now and promoting aspects of the circular economy, if you like, but making it attractive, making it something that people wanted to get involved with. Then COVID hit and we realized that we couldn't do any of those sort of in real life get-togethers. And we decided to just test the water and hold a virtual meetup for anyone working in the cycling industry. So we put out a call on Instagram and thought we might get about 10 people Well, within a day, 2 days, we'd reached our Zoom limit of 100 attendees.
Wow.
So we pulled these people together and actually decided, well, we realized if we've got this many people, we need to make the most of it and structure it a little bit more. So we ran some polls, we put people into breakout rooms, and we really tried to get to the bottom of why is the cycling industry one of the last sectors to actually really address sustainability. Mm-hmm. That told us that there was an appetite within the industry to do something, but there were challenges. And so we set about trying to tackle those. So we've been evolving according to what we find along the way and the kind of the need in the market. We don't want to duplicate any other not-for-profit groups that exist. That's mm-hmm. absolutely not what our intention is. But where we can help and move the conversation along and spur on some action, then we try to get involved. Our main limiter at the moment is resource and capability, mm-hmm. or sorry, mm-hmm. capacity, I should say, not capability, because we all work full-time as well.
Yeah,
but that's where we've got to so far.
Yeah, but it seems that you really hit a crucial point. I mean, it's like a contradiction that a branch, an industry has such a great image, for sure. I mean, it's carbon neutral, but the backside is disregarded. I mean, the production itself is not carbon neutral, for sure. And maybe you just arrived at the perfect point of time to address this mission. I mean, what do you think? Is it just about time to reflect on this question, or is it?
I think the timing actually was fairly perfect. So there was a few things going on. COVID had put a halt to global supply chains. So this is all a bit of a perfect storm for the cycling industry. Meanwhile, everyone is wanting to buy more bikes and get out on their bikes more. So the demand for cycling in the industry is huge and has grown exponentially. Meanwhile, the supply chain is disrupted. Supply was disrupted through the Suez Canal dramas as well. So all of this puts them into quite a tricky situation. But meanwhile, the leaders of these organizations are trying to work out what it means for them and their businesses at a corporate level. And that was something that we found on that initial Zoom call in the breakout areas, the breakout rooms. We asked groups of people, what were the main challenges for cycling companies to really address sustainability? And one of the things that came out was it's not seen as the strategic issue or challenge by leadership. So that's one of the initiatives that we took on to try and address that.
And in which way are you unique? I mean, in which way do you differ from other similar movements?
Well, we're small, that's for sure, which means that we're very agile. I think because there's only, until recently, we've just appointed a fourth director, Neil. But until recently, there was just the three of us running this movement, and we're very aligned. We're different in our skill sets, but we are totally aligned in what we're trying to achieve with this. It means that we can make decisions quickly. It means that we can just take action and get on with things without having to go through huge committees or decision-making processes. I think because the three of us are quite ensconced within the cycling community, we've also built networks ourselves, and having those strong networks has certainly helped in being able to sort of build the right communities and actually get some movement. We recently launched the Cycling Industry Climate Commitment, which was as a result of pulling a group of the world's biggest cycling companies, the chief executives and founders of those, together. We had a group of 12 working with us over a period of 8 months before they said, right, what can we do? What can we do to have an impact with our combined sort of scale? And we said, let's launch. If you issue a letter to the cycling industry and to your suppliers, asking each one of them to calculate their environmental impact and to make a plan and issue their plan to reduce that, the combined impact will be enormous. So first of all, they said, well, we have to have our own houses in order. We said, you're absolutely right about that. So that's what they've done. And then we invited other chief executives of big companies to join that cycling commitment as founding signatories, Riza and Muller being one of them. Sandra, the CEO, has been instrumental in all of this and hugely supportive. And then we now have, as of today, we have 53 signatories from across the world on the cycling commitment. So it's gaining momentum.
So do you reckon that this is your major empowerment, what really pushes you through this initiative? Or where do you else get you energy for, I mean, accomplishing your mission?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of our founding sort of values, if you like, was that we knew that we would always be a very small team in Shift, and we wanted to create a model that could then be amplified through our community and through our network. So really, this climate commitment does exactly that. When people sign up to it, they agree to contact their top 10 suppliers and ask them to commit to the same things that they're committing to around reporting and reducing. So hopefully the ripple effect of that magnifies it every time. And most of the negative impact sits within the supply chain. But when we asked a couple of the big suppliers in Asia, for example, if they were addressing sustainability, have they thought about switching to renewable energy, those kinds of things, they said, well, none of our customers have asked us to.
So would you say supply chain is the major problem which you have to tackle, the major challenge?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to call it a problem. It is literally about sort of educating and supporting the supply chain to move in the right direction. But like any industry, and I see this in my day job, it's pressure from investors, from capitalism, from customers, all of these different pressures combine to make, to force change. And then actually when the change is happening, the companies themselves see the benefits, because there's huge efficiencies to moving to these new models and new ways of working. But the thought of change feels almost too overwhelming to get started sometimes. So once these companies have started, you can see a complete change in the attitude.
So when we break down Shift cycling culture into its three components, Shift, cycling and culture, what you were explaining and describing is the shift aspect of shifting what's inside the industry, but it's also a shift within society.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we're realistic. You can't tell cyclists who have always been aspiring to have the next bicycle to suddenly stop wanting the next bicycle. But if we can all adopt a few of the sort of principles that sit within the circular economy of trying to repair and reuse and keep products working and in use for much longer, that will have a massive impact. So it is really sort of shifting that, but then shifting the perception of what sustainability looks like. Because in the past, sustainability was like wearing, you know, sort of had a bad reputation maybe, and people thought it was like wearing a hair shirt and eating out of day food. And it doesn't need to be like that at all. Quite the opposite. You know, sustainability should be about innovating and design and really making it quite an attractive prospect. I think the kind of the dream is that we live in a sustainable community or lifestyle or system. You don't question whether something's sustainable or not. It just is.
It
shouldn't stand out as being, this is a sustainable bike or sustainable materials or look recycled. We pulled together a sort of outline strategy for Shift, and actually our end goal was that Shift will not need to exist in 10 years' time. We don't want to be around doing this. We're just trying to get the movement going, and hopefully the solution will take over.
But you mentioned a key phrase, circular economy. Maybe we can just dive a little bit deeper into this field, because within the last years, we had kind of the lifestyle or the perspective on sustainability was more kind of renunciation and rethinking and not really being attractive lifestyle. And maybe circular economy, if you can spend some words on this aspect, is a nice approach to bring design and sustainability in an attractive way together.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in sort of simple terms, we're moving from a take, make, waste linear economy where really, you know, you use a product and then you have to get rid of it. And what do you do with that? It's redesigning those products, and whether that's clothing or helmets or the parts, that the group set that sits on your bike or the actual frame itself. It's keeping those products and materials in use and retaining the value of them for as long as possible. That shouldn't be to the detriment of the rider or the cyclist at all, quite the opposite. But what we need to think about is redesigning at the sort of front end of that and thinking about how that's going to sort of transfer or convert to further down the life of the product. So how can you repair it easily? How can you make sure that components don't become obsolete because next year you're going to bring out a completely different bike and a slightly different set of components that are better and shinier, that things can be reused and adapted so that you can keep upgrading your bike. But this, you know, we run circular design program. Eric runs that. He's an engineer by trade. And we've had 20 teams from brands across the cycling industry take part in that. It's great to listen to the ideas that come. They basically redesign their products through that program. And just seeing the product designers get super excited about what could be in a circular economy is great to see. And I can't wait for a couple of years once these are now in production, we'll start seeing those hit the shelves in retail.
So as a consequence, design competencies will become more important in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what kind of competencies do you see there? I mean, what is your observation? Are there already people entering the bike industry with a different perspective on design?
Yeah, they are. And I mean, I'm thinking there's the design of the actual products themselves and designing for disassembly and easy repair. There's also the design of the business models that sit behind it, you know, the kind of rental schemes or subscription schemes. So you don't have to own the product. You can use that for the term of your contract and you maybe swap it in for a better model at the end of it, or an upgraded model, or you upgrade it yourself. There'll be different models in there. But basically, you're never ending. The product itself is never finished.
Finished.
Yeah. Yeah, certain bits of it might be removed and taken back and recycled and go back into the supply chain, but it's a continuous loop.
And what about the aesthetic approach? Does it also play a major role within the bike industry, or do you think it's more like in a business manner or in a more functional way? What's your perspective on this subject?
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how that sort of plays out, because I mean, aesthetics is so important within cycling. Of course they are. We're all so super vain in our own way, whether we admit it or not. So things have to look good. And I think there's a limited community and which is great, but who will embrace the kind of patching and repair and, you know, making it quite obvious that things have been repaired. But I think the majority of cyclists probably want things to look on point. Mm-hmm. So redesigning, you know, the way that we're producing bikes, apparel is going to change. I think the aesthetics will still stay super high because you're using recycled material. You wouldn't know it half the time. You know, you just have to look at the top apparel brands now, and they're already using recycled materials and then trying to reduce the number of materials that are in there to enable them to be recycled again at the end of life, but also trying to increase the durability of its life.
Do you have any examples of products or brands that excel at the interface perfectly between sustainability and aesthetics?
I'm not sure that I would say anyone's completely nailed it yet, but a lot of brands are moving in the right direction. One brand in the apparel space who have really embraced, and they really underplay it. They don't talk about it a lot, but that's Lacoste, a British brand. Rafa have also totally embraced this. And actually Simon Mottram, who's about to step down as CEO, but he was part of our initial chief execs group who drove the climate commitment. But yeah, trying to get they're investing, these companies are investing in the research and development that's required to make sure that because the technical performance of materials is also super important, especially when it comes to bikes, as you can imagine.
So what are your next big steps within the shift cycling culture? So where are you heading to? What are your next big goals to reach?
We would like as many companies in the cycling industry to sign this climate commitment as possible. We're at 53 today. We would like at least 150. We will be working with the companies who've signed that to support them to make sure that they meet those commitments. We've got the first cohort meeting in January. So that's the main focus for us for the time being, but really looking to support the cycling industry in whichever way it needs that is not supported elsewhere.
And you personally, do you have like a personal wish for within cycling culture or in the terms of sustainability, anything what really is around your thoughts?
I don't think I have a very succinct personal wish, but I'm going to steal Eric's because he's got a really good one. Yeah, he's got a really good one. And that is to change the rules around which bicycles in the international playing field can be used and what they should be made from and how they should be made and how they should be produced. So working with the powers that hold the key to regulation to change the rules around what can be used in competition and not.
So reaching out for really the decision making and the very important people to make the right decisions. And thank you so much, Jane. It was a pleasure talking to you and have like a deep dive into circular economy. All the best for you and see you next time, maybe Scotland or in Germany, wherever. I'm looking forward to it.
That would be lovely. I look forward to that too. Thanks so much for having us today.
Riese und Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion. If you want to hear more, be sure to listen to our other episodes.